like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant for a lot of people, and Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Speaking about the beautiful game, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. We're joined by the ex-Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonnell, and a broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Wales 0, Switzerland 0. In the Euros at half time in Baku. 53106 for your text messages. You can listen on News Talk. You can watch us as well on the digital and social channels for Off the Ball, for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store to download the app if you haven't done so already. Good afternoon, lads. Hope you're well. About last night, we'll get to you, Dan, in a moment about what it was like at Tata Stadium. But Italy and Turkey, I think it was as on brand an Italian performance as it could have been. They dominated Turkey, who were too deep, eventually were broken down. The Italian midfield, excellent. They made hay down the right flank. I thought Nico Barella was really good in the game. A 3-0 win, an own goal, Immobile, Insigne, all in the second half. Stephen, do we see Italy as contenders now, if they weren't already after last night? 28 games unbeaten, and Roberto Mancini knows the time of day.
Yeah, they were impressive last night. I think there was a bit of pressure on them, obviously, with the first game being in Rome. And I think some of the football they played, I know the first half was a little bit standoffish at times, both teams. But I think second half, Italy came out and they showed a true quality. And I think 3-0 was probably a fair scoreline in the end. I think Turkey, a young team, they probably were a little bit nervous on the night, you know, opening night with the home crowd back in the stadium. But like you mentioned there in the openings, there were some really good performances for Italy, and they'll definitely consider themselves a threat. Like they know how to win tournaments as a nation, and they've obviously got attacking players, and we're a striker there who got the golden boot in Europe this year. They've always got a chance.
Anybody stand out specifically for you, Stephen?
I think the two forwards, obviously Insigne, I think he's a tidy player. After watching him at Napoli as well over the past few seasons, you know, he's very tidy on the football. They've always got that threat down the middle with Immobile to score a goal, and they've just got a good solid unit. Mancini has got them organised really well, and again, they're hard to break down. Chiellini's still going strong, isn't he? I don't know what age he is now. He's about 39, is he? I don't know. But he still keeps the glue together there at the back. And yeah, they definitely, you wouldn't count the Italians out. There's a lot of good quality teams in the tournament, so it'll be hard to kind of pinpoint one team, but definitely they'll be there or thereabouts in the later rounds, I'd imagine.
Are you sucked into it already, Stephen? Are you buzzed?
Yeah, I was. The first half was a little bit like kind of, you're, you know, because after Bocelli singing, and you're kind of raring to go, and you're watching, and you want it to all kick off straight away. So it took its time, but no, I think yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm watching the Wales game here now. That they're probably a little bit lucky to still kind of not be behind, but yeah, it's going to be a great few weeks, isn't it? You can't beat a tournament football, can you?
37 in August, he is Chiellini.
Is he? There you go.
Kiefer Moore had a chance, all right. I saw a header there in the first half against Switzerland. It's still goalless in Baku, but the Swiss have had 72% possession in the first half. Stephen?
Okay. Sorry, I think we've lost him there, John, but I actually been watching that game. Yeah, the Swiss have been very much on top possession-wise, but it's a strange one, this. Like, it's I don't know what the lads think, and Stephen, when we get him back, that... Like, this is obviously a strange tournament, you know, like with it being spread around Europe. And in some games, you're going to have a real home game atmosphere, you know, in terms of, like, you know, it's in the country of a particular team that's playing, and it's going to be frenzied. Whereas these Baku games, there's obviously a smattering of fans that have made the journey. But it's a warm place. Myself and Johnny were there a couple of years back. And I think the game was Dundalk playing Carabag. And I think the game was at like 9 o'clock in the evening local time. Because, you know, it's pretty warm during the day. And there's not a mad intensity in this game. There's not a huge atmosphere because only a small percentage of fans have travelled. And it is a reminder that this still is... But there's going to be games like this, I think, in the tournament that are a bit flat. in some ways too because of the circumstances. But they're obviously in that group with Turkey and Italy and the format of the competition as well. Like a lot of teams can get through and almost avoiding defeat is like the priority in some of these games, which is obviously can lead to some cagey affairs as well.
Tales from Baku.
Oh, we've a couple of tales from Baku.
On the national radio at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Well, not especially. I do recall myself and Johnny finding a place to play pool with a couple of locals at stupid o'clock in the morning. It's actually like a really nice city. Like it's obviously a country with questionable leadership, and you know its ascent to a position of hosting events and stuff is to do with like UEFA and how they, you know, how political capital works. So you have to take all that into consideration with the place. But actually, once you get there, like Ireland are playing there in October, and I don't know at that stage if travelling fans is going to be still a viable situation. They've let fans in for these games here from the participating countries, so you know possibly it will be. But it is one of these places that it's very expensive to get there. You know, but once you actually get there, it's quite cheap, and it's a nice place to explore and walk around. Some cultural differences, but it's lavish in parts, and then maybe not so lavish in others. But it is warm, so I'm not surprised that an afternoon game, albeit it's a few hours ahead, so it'll probably be an early evening game there. I'm not surprised that maybe it hasn't been a massively high tempo at times in that first half.
Yeah, we've had a chance there for Switzerland as well. Mbolo going close to opening the scoring. I'd say the beer is good, is it, Johnny? Responsibly.
It was, I think the beer was strangely cheap. I think it was like a euro for a pint because Baku's actually, here, there's a goal.
Mbolo has scored. He scored from a corner, scored. Yeah. Yeah,
I was just looking at there seems to be a kind of a shade on the pitch there because I was thinking it is a help to the Wales players that it's warm because they've been so defensive. It's a massive disadvantage for Wales that they have two games in Baku and their other game is in Rome, I think. So this is very difficult. That's probably why they've been defensive and under the cosh as well. In relation to Baku, JD, it's a real showcase capital kind of. It's like I was in Tbilisi afterwards. It's a similar enough part of the world. Much prefer Tbilisi. Baku is kind of it's a showcase capital of a sort of a dodgy regime and a lot of very expensive shops, massive Hilton hotel overlooking which Dundalk players were staying in, which is probably empty much of the time. And then they had the Grand Prix under with this amazing pristine surface, very, very hot though. And I remember talking to the Dundalk players after the game and Patrick McElhinney was saying that you could squeeze the jersey afterwards and it was like taking the clothes like out of the washing machine. They were sweating that much. It's going to be very, very difficult for Wales, I think, in that regard.
Braylon Mbolo from Borussia Mönchengladbach. From a set piece, fires it in, and a Switzerland 1, Wales 0, 50 minutes on the watch in Baku. What did you make of Italy and Turkey last night? The problem for the Turks, I think one of the issues is that we all have our predictions and all that kind of thing, but once you actually get to see teams, then you know where they really stand in the competition. And 3-0, they'll only conceded 3 goals in qualifying, Johnny, Turkey, but now they've got a mountain to climb with all that concession of their goals.
Yeah, it was kind of the card was marked a bit beforehand. The Turkey they've sorted out their defensive play. They're probably a marriage of defensive football and the technical style of football that you'd expect from Turkey. But ultimately, I mean, as when it was 0-0, it was kind of well and good, but they weren't creating anything. And as much as it was a bad goal that they gave away, and it was obviously an OG, there was a bit of pressure on them. I didn't know what to make of Italy, to be honest, because like they're probably the type of team that could go on and win the tournament in some respects. They're just very solid at the back and they're set up sort of to keep it tight under Mancini. Obviously Immobile played well, but you'd be kind of surprised if there weren't a better team. I think really England, if they came up against Italy, they'd fancy their chances. The likes of obviously the better teams in at Belgium, I think, are going to do very well. But Italy, they just looked like they were a team that they had a lot of togetherness about them. The home crowd was quite frenzied, which was great to see. And I think a team to win a tournament like this, you have to be very solid defensively. And ultimately, they look a fairly defensive outfit. But I think Turkey will probably come back into it in the tournament yet. I fear for Wales. I mean, this is going to be a long struggle for them after this, I think.
You have to lose.
I was going to say, the thing for Italy, John, if they do win their group, they're probably in the tougher half of the draw, which is obviously, like they'd be nearly better off being runner-up in that group, you know? I was watching the Swiss on the attack again. Because if Belgium win their group, I suppose that's the caveat. You know, you're looking at potentially, you know, they're on the quarterfinal sort of path, and they're also in the same half of the draw as the winner of that group of death as well. So actually, the runner-up in that group A, you know, plays the runner-up from Belgium's group. So I think we touched on this a small bit last week. Like, there's potentially the possibility that one half of the draw would be really stacked and the other half may not. Now, that could not prove to be the case, and you could get some odd results. But it's just something to be conscious of if people are sort of really fancying Italy now, that as good as they may look, and I still think that in knockout football, the defensive experience that Stephen referenced there, the age of the lads, like, I think that will stand to them. But it's just a small point to note, that they could end up in a very competitive half of the draw.
Well, they still have time to turn it around, Wales 1-0 down. But this is not great for their momentum, is it, Stephen?
No, just looking at them there, like, to be fair to Switzerland, they look quite powerful on the attack. Obviously, in Bolo, he's a really hard man to stop when he gets in full stride. And Wales seem to me like you're kind of sitting off and kind of waiting for Switzerland to do. And now Switzerland have scored, obviously, it's up to Wales to kind of come out with a little bit of compactness that they were in to try and kind of open Switzerland up. And the fear is Switzerland kind of recognise the gaps they're leaving and they go on and score a couple more. But no, it's not a good... You never want to lose your first game in the tournament. And if they do go on and lose it, then it's always an uphill struggle.
Yeah, they've got to go to Rome as well, don't they, Wales? In the group. And Dan, just we'll talk about the actual league later on in the show, but the experience of having fans back in there at Tata Stadium last night for Shamrock Rovers, Finn Harps, what was it like on the ground?
Listen, it was great, John. Like, you know, it was probably quite emotional in a way, to be honest. You know, like just being around the place beforehand and chatting to some of the older Rovers fans there. And again, like, this is the football show, so we're talking about that. But obviously, I'm sure, you know, for Leinster as well, and for, yeah, you know, for people who get to go to other codes in the coming weeks, it'll be a similar feeling. Because, you know, I was chatting to a Rovers fan, Mick McCarthy is his name, he's a Rovers fan since 1957, and he was making the point, and this is the thing, it's so true of so many people who go to the League of Ireland, who go to any sport, you know, he's making the point, like, Friday is his week, you know, his group of friends, like, their entire week is built around Rovers on the Friday, and they've missed that for you know, 15, 16 months. And, you know, in that time, they've, you know, they've missed their club winning the league, playing AC Milan, you know, it was Zlatan coming to town, you know, other events of note, and they've all been sat at home. And there was a real sense last night that, you know, it was a great reunion vibe, people just saying hello to each other. And you know, and listen, they're a lucky club that they're one of the ones, you know, because their stadium is good, you know, they're being put forward for the test events. And I know at other games there was smaller crowds there, but listen, look, I've been to so much, you know, so many closed doors games, and they can be very sterile at times. And there was just a different atmosphere around the game last night. Like, even Finn Harps had a chance in the first couple of minutes, and there was that ooh and ah from the crowd as, like, you know, that anxiety. And in fact, as the game went on, it was a bit of a festival for Rovers at first, and everyone was in great form. But then Harps equalised and held out to get the draw. But even the Rovers lads losing the plot at the referee and the other players, and that's football. Like, that is live football. That's the game. You know, it's all about the irrational stuff. It's not all, maybe it's a good thing they didn't win in a strange way, because, you know, football isn't always happy emotions. It's angry emotions. It's, you know, the trips home, you know, complaining about the ref or the players or what could have been. But whatever, you know, whatever that is, it's far better than watching it on a stream, you know, from your sitting room and you know, pressing the off switch afterwards and not maybe have someone to talk to about it. If, you know, a lot of people there would go into their games on their own and stuff like that, you know. So it's just, listen, it's a reflection of society generally. And, you know, I've been in Dublin a couple of times this week, and, you know, cafes and places are opening again, and, you know, people are linking up with people that, you know, the faces you know all the time, but you might necessarily know the people, but you nod and you say hello to them. And all those little connections and those feelings that people have lost. And there was just a real sense of, you know, it's great to have it back. But probably also, as importantly as well, as that, you know, is that it all goes well. You know, that there's, you know, that it can, it shows that it can be done. You know, I don't want to politicize this show, because there's obviously reasons and different reasons behind different policies. But it does feel like in Ireland we are quite slow. We are playing catch up a small bit. And to me, like, you know, it was a very safe, well-managed environment last night from what I can see. And I hope that the timelines can be brought forward, and, you know, we're filling our stadiums as soon as we possibly can, because we need it.
58,000 people went to UK test events and there's 15 positive cases of COVID. It seems to me that this is pretty safe, and hopefully with the vaccine program that you know, once that all happens, that we can get people back into grounds. And as you say, I think the key thing is the richness of the social currency. Even the way you're painting the picture there, Dan, is almost quite emotional. It's just that is what we've missed for 18 months. The social currency, the crack, the slagging, the pint or whatever, the soft drink, whatever. And just have that sense of belonging. And even if you're not happy and you go to the game and you don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. The players don't know. The managers doesn't know. And to have that is just so crucial for our own well-being and in our minds, I think, at times, because sport is such a beautiful thing. Just the Republic of Ireland. Okay, let's reflect on the Hungary game the other night. Stephen, are you getting the sense that Stephen Kenny's methods could bear fruit? Were you encouraged by what you saw, or are you still a little bit worried?
Listen, we can't get carried away and say it was an unbelievable performance, but if we look at the previous 11, 12 games, I think the game was definitely an improvement. There was progress there. I think there was a solid unit. I think we looked more solid than in any of the other games. I never felt like we were going to be broken down at any stage. Obviously, a couple of half chances, a couple of headers and that. But other than that, I felt really secure. It was the other part of the game I would like to see a little bit more, because I felt like we struggled to kind of get out into offensive areas. I thought Troy Parrott at times, when he was almost coming a little bit too deep, and he was leaving Adam Idah a little bit isolated up top. And again, but these are all things that I'm sure Stephen Kenny and the coaching staff will look back on and think, right, how can we improve on kind of the good base that the kind of defensive performance was. But then there was positives as well, second half. I think when a couple of the changes happened, I think Daryl Horgan, who for me, I was very surprised he didn't start the game, if I'm honest, John. I thought he's always had a good impact in the games. He's come on in recent internationals. And again, in the Andorra game, I know it's only Andorra, but he wasn't on the pitch for long, but he made his mark. And yeah, I was a little bit kind of surprised not to see him in the starting lineup. And he's somebody that when he did come on again, straight away he was involved in the action, and he set up a chance, which was unlucky. And then he, obviously in the last couple of minutes when Ogbeni came on, he slid him through a great little kind of reverse pass. So there's definitely positives there. And to be fair to Stephen Kenny, one positive you will say, you'll come away, you look at all the games, and it's been a lot of lads kind of being given caps, being given experiences. And even the game the other night, that was the first time some of these boys would have played in front of the crowd. So like Gavin Bazuna, he would have been playing at Rochdale, and there wouldn't have been mentioned. There was hardly any. I don't know whether he's played in front of a big crowd before in his career. So to go out and play in kind of a nearly full house was a great experience for him. And on the goalkeepers, I think that's something that's really positive. I think he's got two goalkeepers there going forward that could give him a bit of a headache. And that's a good thing for if you're a good headache. But again, we could do with getting more players like them too. I think we spoke about this on previous shows at clubs that they're at, like some outfield players, maybe at some of the bigger clubs, just to try and kind of get that kind of aura about us internationally, where you kind of players are recognised and you have that belief to go on and win games, because you have players that are around kind of these kind of big names and big kind of winners that in the game, who Gavin Bazun obviously when he's at City and Keller at Liverpool.
Johnny, have we staunched the bleeding, to use that phrase, when it comes to the national team now?
There are ways of looking at this. The Andorra game, you know, when it was 1-0, I think anyone who's been hoping against hope that the Kenny regime would work out would have to have said that, you know, if we lose this game, Kenny could well be gone. And, you know, you might think that's a ridiculous reaction. But to be fair, like, Andorra were so poor. We were in a position of how low can we get? And, you know, that game kind of reminded me of Gibraltar away. It was such a similar setup. And people forget, you know, that Randolph made a great save against Gibraltar that time. We actually could have not won that game. And it would have been gone down the list of one of these embarrassing games. That was actually a game that mattered. But I think one of the things from the Hungary game, which needs to be talked about, is Shane Duffy. And this is Stephen Kenny at his absolute best for me in terms of man management and making a man feel happy in his position after a horrific time personally and on the pitch. And I got so much enjoyment out of Shane Duffy's performance against Hungary. You know, and I've been very critical of him, probably harshly, because I don't think his head has necessarily been in the right place. He's kind of been our most potent goal scorer, which is obviously alarming, but he's been brilliant from set pieces. But even during Kenny's earlier games, you know, he looked shaky on the ball, and I thought he was outstanding at times against Hungary the other night. And, you know, the way that he was able to kind of inculcate kind of confidence in the defenders around him, which I think was badly lacking as well when we lost to Serbia. Just I have a lot of time for Dar O'Shea, but these are very early days for him. And then you see how Ogbeni and Horgan did. Like, I honestly think Horgan's been Kenny's best player pound for pound. I think the two young goalkeepers have been excellent, but Horgan's been very, very good for him. And if you listen to Harry Arthur's interview around the game as well, there's an awful lot of positivity about the group. And when you consider the setbacks that Kenny has had with the Damien Duff leaving, like, I'm still, like, I'd be highly critical of Damien Duff for leaving that Irish setup in the position that he did. I don't really know what his reasons were, but I think it put added pressure on Kenny when he didn't need it. Now he's obviously lost Rory Higgins, that was different, and the goalkeeping situation has been different, but he's had to put up with an awful lot and a really incredible amount of bad luck. And if we are to somewhat in the back of our minds write off this World Cup campaign, and being honest, if we don't qualify for a stupid World Cup in Qatar, I'm not going to be that worried. If we're slightly writing it off and we can blood these young players with Omoma Bedele coming in as well, some other young players that have been injured, like obviously Connolly, I think there could be a lot of positives. And I think in general, we've a major problem still in midfield. I think we will be overrun by better teams until we get better midfielders in. But in terms of the mentality and the body language of the players, I thought the Hungary game was a step in the right direction. And, you know, ultimately, if you take out the Luxembourg game and ignore that, which we can, but if you take that game out and say that never happened, we'd generally be fairly happy, I think, in the context of all the things that he's had to deal with, how Ireland have played. And this is a long road, John. It's not going to happen overnight. And I think he deserves this campaign, and I think he deserves the next campaign, barring this one being a complete calamity.
Listeners, what do you think of what Johnny said there? 5-3-1-0-6. Is it going to be three at the back then, Dan? Because he has changed. He was a 4-3-3 man, very much adamant.
Yeah.
But is that changing now?
I certainly think it'll be three at the back in, you know, sort of away qualifiers. You know, games like the other night. I know. Obviously, it wasn't a qualifier the other night, and we very much have to stress that. But it had the feel of a proper game just with the home crowd. And I think with the personnel that he's got, I certainly get the sense that he's looking that way. You kind of wonder, has Anthony Barry been an influence, you know, who's come in from Chelsea, obviously, and they sort of play, you know, a version of that system. And it seems to be something that he's warm towards. But I think also as well, like, I think John Egan is very important to that as well, as a sort of the centre of the back three. So, someone that they really missed, to be fair. Like, John Egan pretty much hasn't played since the Slovakia game. And I really think that's significant in terms of, because he's quite comfortable on the ball and he's more of a sweeper in that back three. And he's way happier in that position than Shane Duffy would be. Just because it asks more of sort of distribution maybe. But like, Duffy did very well. I completely agree with Johnny. And you have the option, like, Dar O'Shea comfortable on the left. I think they can play that way. Obviously, Seamus Coleman will come back in. So the discussion might be between Coleman and Duffy, oddly enough. And you know, there might be a couple of questions that they have to face come around. But I think with the players they have, I think in the away games they will. Now, at home to Azerbaijan a couple of days later, do I see a back three? I'm not so sure. It's possible that was the mistake they made against Luxembourg, that they were almost too conservative, really, at home and away, and they didn't vary it. And I think listening to Stephen Kenny speaking during the week, he spoke a lot about adaptability and being able to change within three game windows. And I think that you might see a situation where it's the back three for maybe some of those tougher away games, but then maybe in the Aviva at home, it might be more of the back four and maybe something a bit more like the Andorra, the way they set up against Andorra, albeit, you know, like, you know, a much, much weaker side. So, like, I think that's certainly something. I go back to the point. Like, you definitely can't get too carried away about friendlies in the summer. Like, it's a dangerous game. But I suppose the encouraging thing for me was that after 10 days away together, you know, that the centrepiece of the trip really was the Hungary game. And I suppose when there's a lot of question marks around where things were going, I don't think you could look at the game against Hungary the other night and say, well, look, there's a team that's in crisis, that doesn't know what it's doing. You know, it's all over the shop. It actually looked quite a coherent performance, albeit with stuff to work on. And I think certainly, you know, the identity and the pattern and the invention from, say, the front three players in that system, or who they pick, for example, because I would agree with Stephen on that I think Horgan was unlucky to not play the other night. But I presume the thinking was he wanted to play Parrott and Ida as two strikers. So where does Horgan fit in? But actually, it was much better in the second half when it was almost like that 3-4-3, and it was Horgan and Knight wide and Ida through the middle. And there just seemed to be a lot better shape and structure. So you just hope that the lessons from it are learned. Obviously, there's going to be, listen, 7, 8, 9, 10 different players back in September. But I sort of wouldn't be surprised if only like a handful of them like really came back in like straight into the team, if you know what I mean. I think he probably like he probably hit on something the other night that I don't think it requires like massive 4, 5, 6 changes. I think it's more a case of okay, probably in the midfield areas you'd have one or two players back available again. Stephen Kenny has spoken about wanting a fit Robbie Brady. He's spoken about wanting a fit James McCarthy, but he may not get these things, unfortunately. So in some respects, he kind of has to work with what he has. And maybe the pattern from Hungary is something that we see repeated in certain qualifiers in the autumn. But to go back to Johnny's point about, you know, this campaign and the next campaign, listen, Stephen Kenny, let's be honest, still needs some big results later this year to get that. He needs a landmark night. He needs a win, just some big result against the big team just to fully get people going. And with the crowds coming back in, I think that'll be significant too.
I just want to go through some scores and latest scores in the world of sport. The Czech Barbara Krejčíková and the Russian Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, they're tied at one set apiece in the French Open ladies singles final in Paris. Get it games wise, Cork 3-18, Westmeath 22 points, entering the closing stages of their relegation playoff in Division 2 of the Allianz Football League at Porky Cueve. So Cork set for victory there. Wicklow are ahead of Cavan. Wicklow 3-10, Cavan 15 points in the Division 3 relegation playoff. And in Division 1 of the Hurling League, Group B, Round 5, Clare 2-6, Kilkenny 8 points, a later score. It is Antrim 8 points, Laois 3, and Wexford 8 points, Dublin 7. These are latest scores. All these matches threw in at 3 o'clock. It is Switzerland 1, Wales 0 in the Euro. 68 minutes on the watch in Baku. Briel Embolo scoring for the Swiss in the second half. Stephen, is the other Stephen Kenny, Stephen Elliott, hanging his hat, you think, on Ida and Parrott going forward in attack?
Listen, they're the future of it. If you're looking at it, you're looking at they're the future. They're the young boys that he has spoken highly about. He's worked with them at the 21s and he's had success with them. So it's the obvious transition to kind of bring them into the senior team. On Adam Ida, whether he's quite ready at the moment, I'm still a little bit unsure. I still think at times he can do a little bit more, like protecting the ball when it comes into him. And I know it was tough for him the other night. At times he was on his own, but I still think he was a little bit loose at times. And I don't know. I just think when you're playing in the national team, you need to have that little bit, especially away from home. Yeah, as a forward, you have to be able to hold the ball up a little bit better, maybe to give that kind of time for other players to get up and support. And I don't know, but I think it comes down to the line. I think the midfield is a sticky one for Stephen Kenny. It's finding that kind of right gel in there, because I do think in the first half, the way Troy Parra was coming deep, I don't know whether that's because we didn't have a midfield player on the pitch that automatically kind of played and went in support naturally. Like I didn't see that the other night. I was just thinking along the lines of Alan Brown. If he plays, he kind of plays in that advanced role a little bit. And I think if you have a player playing in that midfield that kind of naturally plays a little bit higher, it might kind of force that second striker, whoever that may be, to push that a little bit higher. Because I just think at times I was looking at Troy, he's picking the ball up inside his own half and trying to dribble by players. And listen, he gave her away a couple of times, but you want him further up the pitch, like we've seen against him in the Andorra game, where he's on the edge of the box, and if he goes by a player, he gets his shot off rather than having to kind of do it so deep. So I think there's a few little kind of things that he needs to tweak there, Stephen Kenny. But it's a learning curve. As I said, it's been a really tough time for Stephen, and I'm sure he'll watch it back and he'll recognise what he needs to do. He has good people around him, and yeah, it's not going to. I think it'll be tough. These next qualifiers are going to be tough. I don't think I would be like. Let's be honest, if we qualify, we'll be doing unbelievable, won't we? I don't think anybody is massively thinking we're going to go in there and we're going to qualify nice and easy. I think if we do qualify, then it'll be doing something else. But I still think there's a few little things he needs to work. And listen, it might be a case of giving him that bit of time to let these players kind of embrace what he's trying to do. And there's no quick fix, but I do agree with what the lads are saying. He will need a result at some stage, because I know it looks like we've kind of broken that kind of little curve of getting that criticism, because he did take a lot of criticism, and you could see he looked a little bit relieved in his interview after the game the other night. Stephen Kenny, he just looked a little bit relieved that there was a good performance kind of going into the summer off. But like you say, you can't get too carried away in a kind of post-season friendly, so to speak. But yeah, I do think we need to see Stephen get a result and to give that confidence to him in an important game where the fans can see, you know what, he has it in him to kind of get these players motivated to kind of pull something out of the bag. And I still think that question is still kind of asked of him. And I think going forward, that's something that he will need. But listen, just positive. For me, it's kind of step by step. And there was definitely a bit of progress the other night, albeit not massively offensively, but there's a few things to work with. And even on Benny coming on, I know he's only on for like 2 or 3 minutes. He was probably the surprise package, I think, for maybe Stephen Kenny. Because you put him on and you're thinking, I know he's had a good season at Rotherham, but you're always that little bit unsure of how he's going to adapt. And listen, I'm not talking about somebody that was only on the pitch for like 4 or 5 minutes, but added on time. But in them few minutes, I think he showed everybody enough that he could probably have an effect on games. He has that little bit of pace and that little bit of directness, and it was good to see. So I feel a little bit more at ease going into the qualifiers than say I would have been before that, well, in the 70th minute in the Andorra game when we were 1-0 down or wherever it was, you know. So yeah, it's progress. It's not massive progress, but it's something to work with.
It is still Wales 0 Switzerland 1 in the Euros, 72 minutes on the watch in Baku. Westmeath have survived in Division 1 of the Ladies National Football League, the Lidl sponsored league. 2-16, they beat Tipperary to 2-10. There are divisional semi finals as well. At the moment in Division 1, Cork 3-5, Donegal 3-2, and it's Kerry 4 points, Monaghan 4 points. I'm just interested in your point there, as Stephen Elliott. Who should the midfield personnel be in an ideal world, and what should the shape be?
Yeah, it's a really tough one to kind of answer. Like, you obviously got Josh Cullen, Stephen Kenny seems to like him, Jason Knight as well, another young, these are boys that have come in and done okay. Like, they've done okay without actually, I don't think any of them have grasped the game and kind of said, yeah.
Kiefer Moore, 1-1, Wales have scored. Sorry, Stephen.
No problem, go ahead.
It's a good header. Actually, I want to ask Stephen, do you think a younger Glenn Whelan would have really suited that system at times in some ways? Because I think, like, Josh Cullen is trying to knit things together a bit, and you're just thinking actually at times like Glenn would have suited aspects of what's been asked of the midfielders in some of these games.
Definitely, listen, Glenn is somebody that kind of was definitely mixed reviews all during his international career, but you're not a bad player if every international manager kind of keeps picking you and playing you as kind of one of the first choices. And I do think we lack somebody with that. Like, Glenn played in the Premier League for a long time around, and he held his own against really top players. And he's somebody that done well with Ireland. But I do agree with you. We had somebody along those lines playing at that level week in, week out, and to kind of go in and sit there and just tidy up and give that freedom to the lads in front and the likes of, like, attacking midfielders to say, listen, you just go and play this kind of style Stephen Kenny wants to play. I'll kind of smother up everything kind of if it breaks down a little bit. Because he was very good at that. He was able to kind of read the game very well, Glenn, and he's still playing, obviously, now not at the level internationally, but he was able to read the game and he kind of just got himself in positions and he borrowed a pass to somebody else who could maybe go on and do something offensively. But yeah, I do. We go back to this midfield. I'm still looking at who would be playing there. You obviously got.
There's no one in the hole though, Stephen. Is there really? There's no. Like, I'd love to see Darragh O'Shea given a goal just in a friendly in that holding role position because it's so so important. And we've no outstanding candidate at all at the moment. There's nobody.
I think. Listen, I still think you need a natural midfielder in that position. Like, Darragh O'Shea's good on the ball, but there's a difference between good on the ball, stepping out from the back and picking a pass, and receiving it facing the goal. And
cool,
you know,
turn.
Well, I think he's trying to make Josh Cullen that player. I think, like, James McCarthy was the preference. There's no doubt that James McCarthy was the preference, but you just can't trust that he's going to be there. And as a result, like, I think they're trying to turn Josh Cullen or trying to use Josh Cullen in that position. I don't know what the alternative is, personally. You know, like, a lot of the other players are happier sort of, you know, Malumbi's happier sort of charging on a bit. Conor Harahan is trying to play a bit deeper, but that's not necessarily his best area. Jeff Hendrick, again, like, you know, he's not necessarily that type of player in that sort of that number six role or whatever you want to call it. So I think Cullen is probably the closest thing to it, but I'm not sure if he's the natural in it.
Yeah,
and I think that's the
issue. Like, we can talk, like, John asked the question, who would you have? Like, I think it's one of them where, as a manager, like, you can have all these, you can try all these things. There comes a time and a place, I think, where you have to say, you know what, he's going to be my guy and I'm going to go with him, even if he kind of makes a little mistake here or there in the game, but he can grow with the kind of with what he's trying to do, grow with the team, improve in the system. I think as a man, you have to kind of realise that sometimes. Like we can say, we try Cullen in there one game. Oh no, it didn't work. We tried yet. You can't keep doing that. You got to have some stability in there as a national team where you're going up against teams like, and they'll go, oh, this is the way they play. And I know because teams will study it when you play. And it makes it kind of sometimes it confuses opponents when they don't know who's going to be playing. But at the same time, if you have a system and a structure with the same kind of personnel being used on a regular basis, then it kind of comes a little bit more clockwork. And I think that's why Glenn played so often, because managers felt, listen, he's not the most unbelievable player in the world, but at doing what he does, there's nobody better than him. So why fix something that we haven't got anybody that does it better than him? And I think I agree with that, Dan, to an extent. I do think he's trying to put Josh Cullen in there. And he still has a lot of learning to do and improvement to do. So who knows? In a few more months, in the next games, he may have improved a little bit after playing in there these past couple of games. So it's one of them. For me, I think you have to be careful, though. You have to make sure we have an offensive threat. Like, we can't get caught up in this kind of, we found a way not to concede, but we're going to try and pass the ball. But we need to get to a stage where we pass the ball to a player who's then in the offensive half, who's going to kind of do something. Like the likes of like Daryl Hogan, who's been mentioned a lot during this show. And I know he's looking like he won't be playing at a higher level next year, but I'd be surprised if people haven't even been looking at him in the international window and thinking, do you know what, he could do a job, and just putting a bit of trust. And the thing is, Stephen Kenny's worked with him for a long time, so he'll know better than anybody where his strengths are. So I just think that was why I was even surprised he didn't start. And I know Troy Parrott, listen, he's a young boy and that, but sometimes it's nice to kind of put somebody in and kind of as a forward, you don't want to put too much pressure on him, but we'll see what he does. I'm sure Stephen knows, he would have seen him now as well. Another thing, how long was the kind of break? I think we were together for the best part of 2 weeks. So he would have seen them on a daily basis, how they carried themselves. And I think that itself would have been a good thing, because he didn't have very long with the players in previous games. And I think he would have learned a lot about kind of just personalities as well. And he would have learned a little bit more about Stephen, I'm sure, the players. And I think it was definitely a good thing, these 2 games. I know people kind of turned their nose up when they seen Andorra, because it doesn't really get anybody's kind of meltwater, but listen, it was a bit of a worry in the start of the game, but we finished off getting the goals and we won 4-1. Okay. and then we got a good result to Hungary. So yeah, we move on to the qualifiers now, hopefully with Stephen knowing a little bit more about his players, and maybe there's a couple of lads that might come back into the mix that could come into the team. But I agree, I don't think there'll be massive changes.
Okay, got to take a break. Wales have equalised. Kiefer Moore, brilliant header. Glanced it into the corner of the net from quite a way out inside the box. And it's now Wales 1, Switzerland 1 in Baku. The fans are happy they made the trip. We're back with Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk after this.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3-5. Mario Gavranovic has scored for Switzerland. They lead Wales by 2-1 in the Euros in Group A. They're checking it, though, for VAR. So we're going to wait and see what happens there. I'll just give you some other scores as well from Gaelic Games. Westmeath relegated from Division 2. Cork 3-22. Westmeath 25 points in their playoff at Porky Cueve. And Cavan, unbelievably, after winning that Ulster title, are now going down to Division 4. Wicklow 3-11. Cavan 18 points in Navan. That is a full-time score. We have the Division 1 semis a bit later on, with Kerry and Tyrone throwing in at Fitzgerald Stadium at 5. Donegal and Dublin are getting their match underway at Breffni Park at 7:15. That is a goal for Switzerland, is it? Or is it
no,
not?
No, it is.
Nope.
It's offside.
I'm reading out the GA score, so it's offside and the Wales fans are celebrating. So Wales 1, Switzerland 1. I hate VAR. Group 1, Division 1 Group B in Round 5 in the Hurling. Clare 2-9, Kilkenny 14 points at Cusack Park. Antrim 13 points, Laois 7 is a half-time score from Corrigan Park. Wexford 15 points, Dublin 8 points in Wexford Park, a half-time score from the Hurling. Really high-scoring game, the Ladies Football Division 1 semi-final. Cork 3-5, Donegal 3-5, they are level. Much different story in the match between Kerry and Monaghan, 5 points apiece in that one. So, can you tell us what happened there, Dan? Because we were just going through the GA scores. Was it unlucky? Or was it just...
It was offside. I mean, I think the one thing about VAR, I know we have the odd one with the stray finger or something, but I mean, this one was like, it was a ball into the box, headed over, and Gavranovic, yeah. I mean, looking at the replay now, I mean, actually, it was, it's the right decision.
It's tight, isn't it, Dan? It's tighter
and not actually a second look, because I was talking off air, it's like definitely offside, but actually, you know, it, like the Welsh line was caught, you know, and they probably got away with one a small bit, but listen, by the strict definition of offside, he's offside. But it's like Switzerland are going for it again now. They're obviously a bit rattled there for 10 minutes after they conceded, but they've really stepped things up. They've had a couple of chances, and I think Wales would take the 1-1 now if it was offered to them, definitely.
Okay. Are you looking forward to seeing Denmark in the tournament, Stephen? They seem to have improved, actually, since they changed their manager. And Eriksson is flying again with Inter, finished the season well. They could be dark horses. They play Finland at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, listen, there'll be a few players playing for Denmark that you kind of recognise from the Premier League years, like you mentioned there. Obviously, Schmeichels will probably play in goal as well. And Eriksson, you look into him, he'll be kind of the go-to guy if they're going to do anything in the tournament. But I don't know. I just like there's been a few dark horses mentioned for this tournament, but I still think the winner's going to come from kind of one of the recognised teams. I think the quality that they possess, I think other teams just aren't at that level quite yet. I think for me is England. Everybody keeps talking about England. Obviously, living over here, that this could be the year, and I just hope to God they don't win it.
We'll talk
in depth about England after four. You would have seen a lot of Finland, Dan, obviously, with those Nations League games. We lost them both by goal to nil.
Well, these games today, John, Switzerland, Wales, Denmark, Finland, it's like, you know, it's like a parade of X's or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, even like, you know, we've got a history with all of them.
We have a lot of X's, Dan.
I think four is probably about right. But it's like walking into a sort of place and going, oh no. Like it actually does. It's one of these things that reminds you like Ireland aren't in it, I think, because these are the type of teams that Ireland have like drawn or lost narrowly to in recent years in a lot of cases. Did beat Wales once, of course. But yeah, like I mean, Finland are like a great story. Like this is Finland's major tournament breakthrough. Like this is, you know, historic for them. And obviously, you know, the fan thing is probably, you know, a small bit diminished it, but I'd say in terms of like, you know, what country would you like to be in to sort of be watching the games, I'd say Finland probably would be up there because it's probably a great buzz for them at the moment. And yeah, like Ireland did play them twice in the autumn, and certainly like there's nothing remarkable about them actually since they've qualified, because you forget the qualifying is so long ago, like regular qualifying is so long ago in 2019 that they made it through like regular qualifying, not the playoffs. Their form actually hasn't been great, but what they do have is they know what they are. They have, like, you know, Pukki is obviously their best known player, you know, and they generally tend to have a structured enough setup. There's a couple of players playing in Scandinavia who are dangerous against Ireland, but they're not playing at like amazing levels. But they're a very coherent team, and like the Denmark Finland game to me just has the. I know the Denmark changed.
They're there for the crack, aren't they, Dan?
Like they're gonna have a go at us. Yeah, but I don't know. I think that Denmark got rid of Aga Hareide because they felt his team wasn't exciting enough. You know, they were quite functional in terms of how they operated by the Danish standards, because Denmark still judged themselves by 80s. Like the 80s, like the great entertainers. And since the new managers come in, their results have improved. But you just have this feeling that Denmark and Finland has the potential to be a game where there's not a huge amount in it, you know, and it could go a bit stalemate. Because it's funny, like Denmark at times where you even see the last World Cup, that Denmark can be quite entertaining at a certain level. But then when they got to play Croatia in the round of 16, it was just, no, like this is going to be a horrible game. And you kind of wonder how they'll go here. Will Finland try and bring things that way?
Yeah, Kasper Hullmand is the man who took over from Aga Hareide, has won 8 of 11. Who's going to play in attack? Jonas Wind or Kasper Dahlberg? But we know that Højbjerg will be involved from Spurs. Eriksson pulling the strings.
Thomas Delaney,
Christensen, Kasper Schmeichel,
Poulsen.
And Poulsen, Yusuf Poulsen as well. Switzerland are going close. They're going close, and Wales are holding out in Baku. They're into injury time now. Wales won, Switzerland won in the Euros. We also have Belgium and Russia. I'm obviously siding with Russia today, given the top I'm wearing. For anybody who's watching the digital and social channels, will it be as euphoric though? I wonder, Dan. After the World Cup, it might be a bit more difficult this time around. Although they are playing two of their games in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they did seem to sort of find energy from somewhere in the last World Cup, and like we were obviously both there, John, and they rose to the challenge while still not exactly being the most terrific side to watch in the world. I'm not gonna speak for you. I haven't seen very much of Russia since that World Cup, but I was reading some stuff during the week where a couple of people seemed to think they might actually be okay. Now, obviously, against Belgium tonight, it's going to be, you know, that the toughest game in the group that they'll face. But again, like, that Group B is one where, like, the runner-up has an opportunity to go okay. They play the runners-up in this group here in the round of 16. So, like, well, you know, will they sort of fancy their chances against the other teams in the group? They might. But, yeah, they probably will have that bit of the home buzz behind them. But they're sort of a hard team to read, Russia. Like, most of the players still based at home. And like, I mean, we were, how they beat Spain that time, like, yeah. You know, like, it's sort of, you know, it was one of those hometown stories in the World Cup. And can they generate it again 3 years later?
Was it then?
No, it went to penalties. It was
a penalty.
It was Isco going around the roundabout all day, a thousand passes and nothing.
So Spain basically, like, the passing stats in the game were off the charts.
We've got to take a break.
They couldn't score.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, lads. We've got to take a break. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. 53106, you want to text us about the Euros or anything else in football? For Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward. We're back after the news.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. Speaking about football with Stephen Elliott, the former Republic of Ireland striker, the Irish Independent football correspondent Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Our coverage thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106. Tweet us at Off the Ball. You can listen to us on News Talk and watch us on the digital and social channels for Off the Ball. For Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. Wales 1, Switzerland 1. Is a full time from the Euros, Group A. The other game in that group was a 3-0 win for Italy over Turkey last night. Brayle Mbolo scoring for Switzerland to put them in front, but Kiefer Moore with a great header to equalise for Wales in the second half. So Wales getting a point on the board in Baku. And we got 53106 some text coming in. Hey lads, I'm not a critic or a proponent of Kenny, Stephen Kenny this is, but as a season ticket holder for the past two campaigns, I completely echo Johnny Ward's sentiment. I'm fully willing to give Stephen Kenny this campaign and the next, independent of results, to see if we're actually capable of playing football. If that doesn't work out, then we can always revert to type and we'll have to accept the gritty and unpretty style for the indefinite future. Thanks for your text. And as John Giles says, you don't win anything with a dodgy goalie. That's why England or France will not win the Euros, says Rob in Monaghan. If you want to get involved, 53106. Stephen Elliott, Belgium against Russia tonight. We briefly touched upon Russia before the break, before we had to go to the ads. Belgium, are you confident that they can finally win a major tournament, or are they maybe just slightly past their peak?
I don't know. I think you kind of, with this kind of era of players and this generation, you kind of look at this tournament maybe as a little bit of a last chance saloon for them. You definitely can't ignore them with the quality they have all through the squad. They've got world-class players, like, not even starting games for them, and they've got quality to spring from the bench if the game is a little bit tight. So, yeah, they're definitely going to be... I think they'll definitely see themselves having a big chance of winning this tournament, as will a lot of nations. But, yeah, I'm sure they'll want to get off to a win tonight. Again, it'll be a tough game, obviously, against the Russians, but they've got attacking players. Lukaku scores goals, doesn't he? He looks like a different player than the player he was at Man United when he plays for Belgium, and I think he'll be another one where the onus will be on him. I know they've got the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, Hazard, other players, but I think he'll be the one that will get them the goals, and he'll be the key for them if he can be on form. But yeah, you wouldn't rule them out, would you? But there's so many quality nations in this tournament that it's very hard to pick one. But they'll see themselves as one of the teams that can challenge.
John, I should say here, Stephen was completely right before the break that there was a controversial VAR incident in that Russia-Spain game. Clearly, we were over there, and probably Russian state TV banned this from being shown in the aftermath. I mean, we didn't reflect it, but there was a penalty that should have been given for a foul on Ramos and Piqué in that Russia-Spain game, so that explains it. But I'm only after seeing that you're wearing your CCCP top there, John, yeah. So... You're clearly like this is our 1980 Moscow Olympics vibe off you there. So you're willing to forget that it ever actually happened, you know.
But me and Vlad
actually wear mugs a bit. Yeah.
Me and Vlad are great mates, you know. It's funny because I didn't drink.
He still reads your messages all the time.
He does, yeah. Well, I get the get two blue ticks. I actually didn't have a drink until the very last day of that World Cup. I was very privileged to be obviously there. But I'll never forget, of the whole of the World Cup, that was the best moment when Russia beat Spain for me. Like afterwards, Moscow went absolutely crazy. I was thinking of a city like Moscow, probably hadn't any celebrations since the Second World War of that magnitude, because they weren't expected to do anything. And then they just went absolutely berserk. And the police state as it is, the say police had to come out and start telling people to calm down. They were
it was a bit, yeah, it was a hell of a night, actually, wasn't it? But the one thing I would say is, though, listen, Spain, in a way, yeah, they were probably unlucky. But from what I recall, you didn't end up feeling too sorry for them because of how unambitious they had been in a lot of their play in the match, too. You know, that they passed the ball around with no real incision, but they were mugs. But listen, everyone in Moscow had a good night, John, so that's all that matters.
Well, that's it. You know, probably their last good night. Probably the last good night they've had, you know. Belgium, Johnny, are you a Belgian man? Yuri Tielemans is obviously flourishing in midfield at the moment. De Bruyne will miss this game because of that injury sustained in the Champions League final. I think they're flat track buddies. I think they'll be found out defensively later in the tournament. Do you agree?
Yeah, I always actually thought Lukaku was a flat track bully, but I think he's proven that he's more than that. There's so much quality in that team. You know, pound for pound, they must have a better team than Italy. Will Italy have a bit more about them sort of defensively? Vertonghen out of Real, obviously. You know, I think they're going to be one of the better teams to watch anyway. I can't wait to see De Bruyne back. So I think he'll come into the tournament relatively fresh after the season he's had. Obviously ended quite disappointingly, but I think they're probably my ideas of the winners. Them or England. And we'll probably get to this whether we totally not want England to win this or whether we do want them to win it, but Declan Rice just not play or what the story is. But no, I think Belgium are going to be great to watch. What I'm hearing from, you know, pre-tournament chat is that Russia are very much there for the taking. And it was interesting as well, just around about the Finland-Denmark game. Like, I was just looking up the odds for this. Like, Denmark are absolutely raging hot favourites to beat Finland. Now, I didn't think Finland were that bad at all against us in the two games. I thought they were a fairly functional side. So I think that could be closer. And I think I'll adopt the Finns as my kind of team to follow, especially as I'm going to maybe have a few quid that they'll keep the score down at the very least against Denmark.
Okay. Any last orders on tonight's game? So we got Belgium against Russia later on, and then we have that's an 8 o'clock start in St. Petersburg, and we got Denmark and Finland and Copenhagen at 5. Any last orders, or we move on to England? Okay. The auctioneer's hammers come down on those games this evening. Stephen Elliott, England. We know you don't want them to do well, but the array of talent that they have, kind of the feeling that Maguire might actually start. But what would worry me is that, does even Southgate know his best team? Because I'm not sure what England team is going to line out against Croatia tomorrow.
No, and I think we spoke about this before. We look at the England squad of players and you can't help but be a little bit envious, can you, with some of the quality they have and the strength and depth and the fact that we're probably on the eve of the tournament for England and we're still discussing who Gareth Southgate's best team, what Gareth Southgate's best team is, and no matter what kind of players you put in the team, it's still a really strong team. So I think it doesn't really matter. The tricky game, obviously the Scotland game is going to be tricky for them. I think we're being a derby and obviously everything that goes with playing against Scotland, the history with the two nations. But I think even the Croatia team, I think England will just have too much for this group. But I think it'll be the later rounds will be the interesting ones for me, whether defensively they can kind of keep teams at bay. I don't know whether Maguire will start the game, whether he's fit enough to play, but he's got other lads, I think, for the group stage that can come in and do a good job. But offensively, England are going to be a threat right all through the tournament. Some of the players they have, the likes of Sancho, who I think is a really, really good player. We don't see too much of him because he obviously plays over in Germany and that. But I think every time I've seen him play, I've been really, really impressed for him. And then you've got Harry Kane, somebody that more or less guarantees you goals, doesn't he? Even when he's not fully fit, you know, he'll put any decent service into the box and he'll score your goals. And it's who he goes with along. So I think he'll play with Sancho, but whether he'll play Rashford or Sterling, I don't know. He likes both of them, but I don't see him starting both of them. I just think the two of them haven't been in great form, but I do think he'll pick one of them. And again, it's even the midfield three. He's got such a luxury there of who he wants to play with. The likelihood is he's going to play Rice. But who does he play alongside him? Does he play Mount and Phil Foden? Does Jude Bellingham come in and play? Because from what I've seen in the friendlies, he's looked like, well, he plays like a player who is at least 10 years older than what he is, and he doesn't get kind of flustered by anything. And yeah, Southgate, he'd be rubbing his hands together. He'll have a bit of a headache selection-wise, but England have a great chance. Like, messing aside, I really think they've got a really good chance to go on and win this tournament.
He's not even 18 years of age yet, Jude Bellingham. That is just is an incredible story, really. But who should he play? Stephen, who would you want to see in that team, in that midfield?
If I'm an England supporter, I think I would want to see one defensive midfield player, or maybe kind of Mount and Foden either side of him. I'd like to see Grealish in the team. I just think when he plays, I think he grabs everybody's attention. Even I watched the past two internationals, the England games there up at the Riverside in Middlesbrough, and you're watching the games and I find myself thinking, give him the ball, give Grealish the ball, he'll make something happen. And I don't think there's many players in world football that kind of makes me think like that. So for me, Grealish has to play. But again, who else does he play? We talked about Sancho, Sterling. Like, he's going to have to leave some of these players out up top. So I would probably go with Kane. I would leave Sterling and Rashford out, if I'm honest. If I'm the manager, I'd play Kane, Grealish and Sancho. I'd play them three up top with Rice, Mount and Foden behind them. That would be my kind of selection in offensive areas. I just think England going to win this tournament, they're going to have to be good going forward and score more goals than the other teams, because I do think they'll concede at times.
Well, John Giles was speaking to Nathan Murphy on the show during the week, and he is not convinced by Gareth Southgate's management style.
He was playing Lingard, I think, and he wasn't going to be in the squad, and a few other players, Nathan. I mean, they were practice matches for what your preparation for going into the particular tournament. And of course, with the players that he had, he didn't have to play them all in the matches that were there. But there was a few players that were playing that weren't going to be picked for the tournament.
Yeah,
I don't get that at all.
Yeah,
if he's going in now, you were saying that he's going to try this, and this is going to be in the first competitive match. Like, you should know your players as manager who've been there for 5 years, inside out, inside out, to know your best team and have tried your best team before you go into the tournament.
I don't know if international football is where all the great managers are right now, but when you look at Southgate and the players that are available for England, and going through some of the ones we've just named, is he the right man? Do you think he's the quality of manager that this English team needs heading into a major tournament?
Well, I must be honest, I'm not a great fan of his, Nathan. I think he's a good lad, and I think his PR part of it is excellent. But I mean, from what I've seen him in the past, even in the last World Cup, he had a good World Cup in terms of results, which is the main thing. But I think he got, you know, looking at the first teams that he played in those, like, he, nobody in midfield in it. But I thought he was lucky in the last.
Barbara Krejcikova has won the French Open ladies singles title. She's beaten Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in three sets. 6-1, 2-6, 6-4 in Paris, so well done to her. I'll just give you some Gaelic game scores as well. Cork 3-22, Westmeath 25 points, Páirc Uí Chaoimh in the Division 2 relegation playoff. So Westmeath are down, as are Cavan to Division 4. Wicklow beat them by 3-11 to 18 points in Navan. Limerick 3 points, Derry 2, a latest score in Carrick and Shannon. And in the hurling, Division 1, Group B, Round 5, Clare 2-14, Kilkenny 21 points, so Kilkenny up by a point there. Antrim 17 points, Laois 13, and Wexford 20 points, Dublin 1-14. Just on Gareth Southgate, Dan, the expectation is back, and with the talent at their disposal, he is under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, like, definitely. I mean, I suppose isn't it funny that it's sort of Euro 96 vibe is the one that England are trying to create, you know, recreate. And, you know, the sort of the person who missed the penalty in that sort of decisive game is now the central figure in all of this now. And, like, it's clear that he is trying to, you know, you see some of the stuff this week again, like, you know, the darts games, and they're trying to, like, recreate what they had in Russia. But it was very different in Russia, because it was probably the first time in recent memory that England had probably flown under the radar into the tournament. They weren't necessarily a big part of the pre-competition discussions. Whereas now, it's flipped completely. And with all their games, bar one, potentially being at Wembley if they win their group, Like, they have the opportunity to generate some momentum, but I mean, just listen to Stephen there. I mean, there's so many permutations. It's like the old sort of, you know, you could probably do like hundreds of combinations, like, you know, of options. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case in 2018, where they sort of had a sort of a settled enough system that they hit upon for the finals at the time. You know, that it was a three at the back and Harry Maguire, and it just seemed to work for them in that moment. Whereas obviously Harry Maguire's fitness seems to have an impact, and even some of the speculation during the week whether Maguire was fit or not, it seemed like Southgate was looking at all sorts of, you know, combinations in response to that, in terms of maybe, you know, a back three with Luke Shaw on left of the back three and Chilwell left wing back, and, you know, just you know, stuff that they wouldn't have necessarily, teams they wouldn't have played before, you know, in games. But they are, like, listen, from our perspective, it's obviously a love-hate thing, that, you know, I'd probably be in that, in the group of people who wouldn't necessarily enjoy England winning the competition, I have to say. But in saying that, they are, the longer they go in it, it tends to be more interesting too, in a strange way, because there is this sort of theatre and drama around the England team that can be compelling in its own way. So it's almost the case of, you know, happy enough for them to go far enough, just not like if they don't actually end up lifting that trophy at the end of it. But they have the potential to be very good to watch if they click in those areas. And like, over the years, you've watched England go to tournaments, regardless of what's been going on with their players at club level. Like, you know, think of 2010 in South Africa, 2014 in Brazil, actually looked not good to watch. Like, you would, like, they were just not, like, be outpassed by teams, and teams would be more creative. Whereas actually now, like Stephen mentions, Grealish and players, that you actually feel like England are a team that you want to watch their games, because they're one of the better teams to just enjoy their football. And that is actually a sea change, to be fair, from where they're at. And maybe in some respects, that's why people have warmed to them in some ways too.
You don't think that, Dan, that's why, say, I know myself, I like watching them play, getting so far, but is there still that little bit inside you that just can't want them to win? I don't know what it is. I try and want them to win. Like, my wife's English, the kids are happy, but I just can't bring myself to kind of, like, it's always, that's an automatic shutter that comes down. You watch them, they're great.
That's hard enough for us without having kids.
So you've had English, I mean, you are an ultimate case study here now. You should be sat down.
I've had massive arguments because, like, my son, when he got knocked out by Croatia, was running around the living room, like, and he done that off his own back, but, like, I was getting in trouble off my wife as if I was kind of making him do it. Like, oh, he's done that himself. You know what I mean? I'm sitting there calm watching him. He's celebrating.
You're
taking
a good father.
I just didn't speak to him for days.
You're a very good
John Duggan. I think John Duggan is okay with the English thing. Like, some people would say it's immature to be thinking that way, and we need to get over it. But, like, I don't know. I can't get my head around the idea of England winning their competition. I have to admit. And people would say, you know, you need to grow up with that sometimes. But you can't help how you feel.
I don't even want Scotland to win it, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, I don't think you're going to have that problem, to be honest, to be fair.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I just think these are the nations that I used to, like, kind of see. You know, when you kind of, we used to compete with them, and you're just like, I don't want them to be that far ahead where they're winning tournaments and we're, like, celebrating wins over Andorra. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
I have no issue with that. I went to see Tottenham when I was 9 years of age, and it was an amazing experience, and I've been a fan since 1986, and... my sister is married to an Englishman. My nephews are half Irish, half English, and I've no issue with that. After 55 years, I think maybe then winning a tournament wouldn't be something I'd be too upset about, to be honest.
I think they're a bad bunch of lads as well, JD. Like, from, you know, from Southgate himself to Rashford. They're pretty likable. The problem for me is I was talking to Will about this yesterday, and I realised halfway through my kind of spiel that the reason I don't want them to win is I just can't imagine being any way happy to see Declan Rice lifting, you know, the European Championships. As much as I completely defended him at the time, it'd just be hard to see him consistently singing God Save the Queen throughout the tournament and then lifting the tournament with all his buddies, having, you know, basically turned his back on Ireland. And with Grealish, on the other hand, I'd love to see Grealish do well. I think he's a brilliant player. But the Rice thing would become hard if they, you know, were on the cusp of winning the tournament. That would probably tilt it in the balance. Well, I think if you did a poll of our listeners and viewers or whatever, it'd be, it'll be interesting. I think it'd be fairly 50-50 on whether you'd like England to do well or not.
Well, 53106 is the text number, or at Off the Ball on Twitter. But you can have both. You can have a conflict. You can have a dual situation. You know,
yeah, John, you can.
I think that's fair. They're going to be a good side to watch as well. You know.
You can want them to go all the way to the final, but then lose it. Like that's the way you settle it.
You're probably the same. Of all the international teams in the tournament, I'm probably more kind of interested in watching England than anybody. I'm looking forward more to watching their game because of the players that we watch week in, week out, which is probably, it's a little bit kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. That
it's a bit hypocritical in some ways. I'm the same.
It's like when you see all this kind of coming home and they're all like, obviously it might be a bit different with COVID. No wonder, like the big screens around the cities and they're like, oh, and I just think, oh no.
Would we not be doing it though if we were in this position?
Yeah, but we're good, and all, like, aren't we? You know?
Yeah, but like we think we're great, but then like, you know, we send, you know, we have a few pints in town and, you know, they have to basically close the place down. And, you know, so I don't like, we're so bad as an international football team relative to England. Like, what was the tournament where we were there and England weren't? Was it Euro
94?
USA 94.
USA 94.
So I was a kid at that time and I didn't think it was abnormal that Ireland would qualify for like two successive World Cups and England weren't there, and was like, you know, we were almost on a par with them. And now they're like, when you hear the debate about the players at Southgate, like he might leave Sterling out, he might leave such and such out, you're like, oh my god, like what we would do for any of these players. Like, we're so far off them at the moment.
The thing is though, Johnny, like we were speaking about dark horses there earlier on in the show, like how long do you reckon it is before we're a dark horse at a tournament? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know whether we'll all still be alive at this rate, will we? Do you know?
More of a dead horse at a tournament. But I think, it's a strange one, though. Like, this England debate, because there's layers to it. Because like, I've been at a lot of the major tournaments where England have been there. And like, even in 2018, even around their fans and stuff, there was quite a good vibe, you know? And maybe it was just because Russia was a place that, not too many travelled. And maybe those that travelled were a small bit more open-minded and stuff. But, like, you know, I think of years back, being in South Africa in 2010, I think it was Port Elizabeth or somewhere, some dingy place, and like, you know, you hear this sound of England fans in the distance singing about 10 German bombers and all of this, and you're like, I can't want this team to do well, you know. It's just like there's an element attached to the support sometimes. And don't get me wrong, for all the talk about the Irish fans being good crack, like for a lot of other people might just find them annoying as well too, you know. But there is a sense that, like, you do think of some of the stuff around English fans at games and stuff, and you are, listen, we've had our own experiences in 95 and like some of the people that latch onto them. And I think that's always, for all we joke about maturity and immaturity, like, I can understand, like, I don't think Irish people should ever have to apologize for not wanting England to do well. Like, I think there are very natural reasons for that for a lot of cases. Other people will point out it's far more complex and they have completely different attitudes. They're from mixed families or whatever. Although Stephen's from a mixed family and he still feels like the old way.
No, but I just can't get behind it.
Yeah, it is, of course.
Football, you don't want your local rival to go and win it. Like Bowes fans don't want Shamrock Rovers to win the league this year. Do you know what I mean?
The problem is, if Ireland and England are in a tournament together, like by and large, every England fan will be wishing Ireland well, and that's why we seem deeply insecure in that. Like, the English will always wish us well in tournaments, whereas like for a long, long time, basically we wanted England to lose, and now we're crap thrown into the bargain as well. So it's difficult, and we do feel a little insecure when we kind of want England to lose in a tournament that, let's be honest, I mean, we don't really have much of a loyalty to anyone in it.
Mind you, I would say, we talk about the likability, and there's obviously different views in the whole thing. You were saying almost all of the England fans, but like, obviously, the no surrender lads probably wouldn't. And, you know, we have the taking the knee thing, which I don't necessarily want to go down that road. But obviously, you know, a lot of goodwill around England, like, you know, if the taking of the knee is like booed before some of the England games and stuff, there is a possibility of a slightly different atmosphere and a debate creeping in around that English team too as well. And that's obviously a slightly complicated issue as well, because, I mean, even the issues around the games in Middlesbrough, like, I mean, they were like the England supporters club, the England hardcore. So they're not everyone's cup of tea, you know, and that's possibly why there's some antipathy towards England.
53106, a Cork man was asked once, is there any chance you'd chat for England? He said, I would if they were playing for a tip. on 5-3-1-6. And the reason why we're talking about this, in 2018, the top seven shows in Irish television, Late Late Toy Show, Six Nations, England, Ireland, number three was New Zealand, Ireland in the rugby, number four was Croatia, England. More people watched Croatia, England in the World Cup semi-final than they watched the hurling final and the football final. So we are curious about how they get on.
We're a strange race, though. Like, obviously, we've colonial hang-ups, Judy, but whatever about our fascination with... We've an absolute fascination with the royal family as well in this country. Like, and this, I'm not talking about the Northern Ireland.
Or the TV show.
Or the TV show, I can understand. But, like the Irish Times the other day, something about, like, Meghan Markle and whether she, like, asked Queen Elizabeth about the naming of the baby or something was almost, like, one of the top read stories. Like, this is absolutely incredible to me. But... obviously, we've a strange post, like, I don't want to say abused, but obviously we were the small power in a colonial empire, and, you know, we fought for independence, but we still have this massive fascination with England, and it hasn't gone away.
The crown as well.
Yeah.
5-3-1-6. England wishing as well as, like, Alex Ferguson getting out with managers like Isa Pulis. We're not a threat, so they treat us nicely, says Owen on 5-3-1-6. Croatia, will it give many problems tomorrow, do we think, lads?
They're going to be a decent outfit technically. Whether they're going to be as good as what they were in the World Cup, I'm not too sure. They're a little bit older, a little bit wiser as well, but maybe some of their legs aren't as fresh as they have been. But Croatia are always going to be a decent football. They're always going to have technically good players and they'd be organised. So, but I still think England, like, will be looking at them and thinking it's their time. They're going to get that little bit of revenge after the semi-final. And yeah, no, I can't see them. You would expect it'll be either them or Scotland, maybe finishing second in the group, you'd imagine, but you don't know. You don't even know what happens in these European football games. I think Scotland, though, this England and Scotland game, I think there'll be more pressure on England in the Scotland game than in the Croatia game this on Sunday. But I suspect England will beat Croatia on Sunday. That's what I think, quite comfortably.
I'm not so sure about the comfortable aspect of it, but I think definitely that the point is about the aging thing, like, the, you know, just from reading up on Croatia, that actually they pretty much have, there's maybe only one or two positions where they've brought in different players. There's a guy playing for Rangers, actually, who's come into the team, but that generally it's the same core of the team from 2018, and that's still, like, a very good team, you know, like, you know, you talk about sort of Modric, you know, Perisic, Brozovic, you know, the guys at Inter Milan. But it's that age factor. I mean, Modric, I think, is 35 now. Like, there's a couple of teams in this competition. It's a bit like, you know, Gareth Bale is a bit older. But there's certain countries who have their, like, their Galactico player, their star player, and it all revolves around them. But, like, you know, even if the competition was 2020 rather than 2021, you know, they're just that bit older. And that's going to be the thing. But, I mean, they do have, like, the flip side to that point is we're listing a million combinations for that England team there. You know, Croatia probably aren't having that same issue and that same debate. And that could make them, in the first game of a competition, a little bit more of a stable operation. So, I take that point. That maybe offsets it a bit.
Steve, can I ask you, actually, what do the Ireland players want from, like, do the Ireland players in this Irish group, for example, or any Ireland group, how do they want England to do?
What, as a player?
Like, do the Ireland squad in general, if the Irish squad are around, just happen to be watching an England match, do they want England to win or do they want them to lose?
If I'm watching England, I don't... If it's a friendly game, I don't really care. Me, I'm speaking obviously for myself.
It's not a friendly game. It's a World Cup qualifier. England are playing the world. England are playing the European final. Do the Irish players want them to win or do they want them to lose, considering they all play in England?
I would guess that they want them to lose. They won't probably say it publicly, but... deep down, why would you want England to win? Like, I don't know. I'd be very surprised if maybe some of the kind of English Irish lads that have aren't a little bit more kind of, I don't know. You just don't want them to win a tournament. I don't know what it is. You just don't you know? You don't want them to win a tournament, do you, Johnny? Surely.
Being honest, now, if it got to the occasion, I can talk all I want. I'm pretty certain, like, instinctively, without me doing anything or being able to do anything about this, and all I can say on the radio, my body just does not want England to win these games. But it doesn't really make sense at this stage, but that's just how it is.
Isn't it easy to say, yeah, I want England to do well, and it's great you do well, and then all of a sudden you see them in the semi-final, and you think, do you know what, man, they're two games from, and all of a sudden it's that, like, even if you're saying, you're trying, I want you, like, I'd be speaking to me father or something, I'd be like, yeah, I don't mind if you, deep down, and it's like, no, he's getting knocked out, and then I can relax.
Father-in-law's not listening to this show, just to be clear, he's not listening to
it. This is an awful lot like Brexit, in that people voted for it knowing that it wouldn't happen, if you know what I mean. So it's like, grand, we can do this hypothetically, but... well, let's vote for Brexit because it'll never happen. And now the reality is that it is. And if England are on the cusp of winning, you know, a final, and we were sort of saying all along, yeah, I'd love England to do well, then you'd be like, no, actually, no, I don't.
I don't even know the reason why I don't want them to win.
Is it all the nonsense? It's not the players, it's not the manager, it's the nonsense around it.
We spoke about, like, all the poppy stuff before in this show. I've no problems with any of that stuff, the way, as an Irish, I understand history is history, and I've moved on for that, sure. But it's just regarding the football, I don't know, it's just something inside me that doesn't, like, see if England winning the rugby, I don't even care. It's just the football. I don't know whether, because I'm kind of, because I love football, it's just see if England won the World Cup in rugby, I swear to God, it wouldn't bother me, because I don't really, I don't love rugby the way I love football, so I wouldn't be that bothered about it. Like, whereas in football, I just can't want England to do well. I don't know.
I'm very conscious saying this as a member of the media, but sometimes it can be the media hype and the buzz that generated, and probably. We're all roughly around a similar age. And I think that, the England team, the so-called golden generation team and, the early 2000s, that team, 2004, 2006, and some of the buzz and hype that was generated around them, maybe even the way that they would speak about other nations that they were playing against, the assumption that England were going to go and do it, that maybe in a way... they built themselves up for that fall sometimes. Even when they played Iceland in 2016, and some of the language about Iceland beforehand, the small bit disrespectful, and you can't help but enjoy that. And because we live and we consume all their media and we consume all their, their punditry and their, their TV and everything, we see so much of it. And sometimes it's it's a very exceptionalist view of the world that it's, we are England. That I think a lot of people just naturally rally back against that too. I think that's a big thing.
The thing though, as well, from an England point of view, they've not won anything. I know they won the World Cup in 1966, but they've gone through years of not winning anything as well. They're probably due, considering they're a huge football nation and they've got really kind of great history in the game, they're probably due to win a tournament. And most people wouldn't begrudge them, but I just think our small little island probably just would, wouldn't we? But the thing is, though, if they're ever going to win one, I think now is the time. They've got a huge chance. We can't get away from that.
They're going to go out in the last 16. That's what's going to happen, isn't it? And we'll have nothing to talk about. 53106, lads, how could you want England to win anything? It's post-colonial bias, and I'm okay with that. I'll watch their matches, but I won't be able to relax until they're knocked out. New Zealand never want Australia to win. Canada never want the USA to win. It's normal, says Pat. You'd happily watch them go through it winning, but the aftermath, the constant rehashing, replaying, chest beating, fist pumping would make you hate yourself forever. JD, personally, I love watching the English. There's always a drama. However, the soap opera from the English media is by far my favourite viewing. Hype, 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 hype. Cue inevitable failure, then boom, media blackout. It never happened. Top viewing, says Bobby in Castle Connell. 53106, this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Do not go away.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock in the company of Stephen Elliott, the former Republic of Ireland striker, the Irish Independent football correspondent, Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Text 53106. Just to let you know some sports news. Barbara Krejcikova has won the French Open. She's beaten Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in 3 sets. In Gaelic games, Cork survived in Division 2, 322 in the football to Westmeath's 25 points. Cavan are down to Division 4, Wicklow 311, Cavan 18 points, a final score. At the moment in Division 3 in the semis, it's Derry 8 points, Limerick 7. And Mickey Hart's Louth, the Lee Carlow 111-6 in the Division 4 semi-final. In the hurling full times, Clare 420, Kilkenny 125 in Ennis, Antrim 223, Laois 122 at Carrigan Park, and Wexford 25 points. Dublin 118. That is at Wexford Park. And full time in the ladies' football semis, Cork 510, Donegal 313. A latest score in Division 2, Kerry 110,
Monaghan won 9. It has ended. Wales 1, Switzerland 1 in the Euros in Baku. That is in Group A, the same group as Italy and Turkey. And Denmark and Finland kick off at 5 in Copenhagen. And we've got then the Denmark team, pretty much familiar names. Kasper Schmeichel's in there, Andreas Christensen, Pierre-Emil Højbjerg, Christian Eriksen. And Timo Pukki is fit to start for the Finns. We've got Belgium and Russia kicking off at 8 o'clock. Text in here on 53106. We're talking about England and supporting England and not supporting England. And Croatia, they're playing tomorrow. Jesus, a bit sad you can't get by England winning. I'm Irish and Liverpool fan, but wouldn't mind them a win, says one of our texters. We were in a bar in Berkeley, in the States, in the 2018 World Cup for the J1. The cheers when Croatia knocked out England were a sight to see. The rivalry is only natural. It's dying down somewhat as the gulf between us now puts them on a pedestal. Hopefully not for long, from a Cork man who doesn't support Kerry. I do remember that. I was watching the World Cup final in 2014 in a bar outside the Maracanã in Rio. I don't want to go really further into that story because mad story. But when Germany scored against Argentina, the Brazilian fans went absolutely crazy because they could not fathom or cope or deal with Argentina winning the World Cup on their soil. So rivalry is rivalry. And there's nothing wrong not to want England not to win the Euros, you know?
I was just going to say, John, there's actually a quote. It's funny, it's very topical. I see Luka Modric was up doing the press conference today for England, and he said he's ended up talking about the English, the hype around the English team and why it winds some people up. And the actual quote was, that arrogance is not so much related to the players, but the people around them, some of the journalists and the commentators. So Modric is obviously, who's lived in England, has ended up speaking about this today. And someone actually did it. It was Miguel Delaney tweeted that, and someone posted in reply. I mean, this is, talk about how England build themselves up for a fall. It was the Sun front page after England qualified, or the draw for the 2010 World Cup. And the headline was easy, because it was E-A-S-Y, and Algeria was A, Slovenia was S, and the Yanks, as in the USA, was Y. So, and then the headline below was best English group since the Beatles, with a picture of like Wayne Rooney and John Terry and Steven Gerrard superimposed onto the World Cup. And of course, like England got, you know, they were gone in the groups, weren't they? Or they were home. No, sorry, they struggled through the groups, and then Germany killed them in the round of 16. You're thinking, yeah, how could you not enjoy them failing after that sort of build-up, you know? I mean, come on, you're only human.
It's not the player's fault, that, though, is it?
No, but that's the whole point of what Modric is saying, too. That's what Modric is saying, too. Yeah. It's the noise around it rather than the group themselves.
Today is the anniversary of 88 as well, JD, which I always remember my brother's birthday is the day of the anniversary of 88, so I don't forget the birthday. What a day, yeah. I don't remember it, but sure, a lot of our listeners do.
Oh, I do. The Pennies, I think, had a T-shirt within a day or two of a black and white photo of Ray Houghton scoring, and then just England nil, Republic of Ireland 1, and the date, the 12th of June, 1988. I remember just looking at my dad, I was 9 years of age, and just the disbelief in our faces. This will always be the greatest day in Irish football history. I think the greatest day in Irish sporting history is Ireland-Romania. But I think the England game, beating England at our first ever major tournament in Stuttgart, it was a fairy tale. Not from the perspective of us achieving it, because we'd brilliant players. Like we'd the Golden Boot winner, John Aldridge. We'd Ronnie Whelan. We'd all these players, like league winners. But to actually go and achieve that was an incredible achievement.
And I think Finland are looking for their bit of that today. And of course, people are going to watch this Finland game at 5 o'clock and see a Daniel O'Shaughnessy playing centre half for Finland. Whose dad is from, dad from Galway. So, we need something to latch on to. So, a Daniel O'Shaughnessy with a Galway dad, maybe we can get on board with that, you know?
It has been pointed out that between Daryl Horgan and obviously David Ford involved and Ryan Manning and Aaron Connolly, that Galway's probably never been better represented in the senior setup. So, yeah, there you are.
Probably handy hurlers as well, they'll have them.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know Patrick Coogan comes from a strong hurling family. I'm sure there's a bit of a crossover in some of those sort of South Galway boys. But we were having this debate about why Mayo people are so absolutely infatuated with football, and then you think, well, Galway kind of has like hurling and has more soccer as well, and it's kind of maybe that's why we've been such a singular failure at soccer ourselves. But anyway, it's not too bad on the international setup at the moment.
We've got the Netherlands tomorrow against Ukraine. Stephen, are the Dutch going to flop without Van Dijk, or do you think they'll have a good tournament?
I think they'll do okay. They've got a decent squad of players there.
Okay, we seem to have an issue with Stephen's line there. Dan, are you looking forward to seeing the Dutch?
Yeah, I mean, like the group is quite attractive. It's quite a winnable group for them. When you think about it, like they actually, since they got to the World Cup final, and you think like they could have won the World Cup in 2010 with the chances, but like their actual recent record for missing tournaments has been dreadful. You know, like they haven't participated in a couple of major competitions. They missed out on 2016, didn't they, when everyone qualified?
Yeah, it's the first tournament since the recent semi-finals in 14.
Yeah, like, you know, so when you think about it, for a country like that, it's sort of extraordinary. And I know there's obviously various views being expressed about De Boer and actually how exciting are they going to be to watch. I know Jamie Delaney would have been speaking about that during the week. You would think that still, you're obviously missing an outstanding defender. They should have enough sort of ability in attacking areas to sort of go reasonably far. But I'm not so sure. There seems to be a lot of people who've been watching a lot more of them who aren't as convinced.
I did a podcast during the week about it, and there was an English journalist on, Jonathan Wilson, who's like really knowledgeable on football in the East, and he made a couple of interesting points. One, he thinks the Dutch are ridiculously overrated in this, and he really thinks Ukraine have a great chance of winning the group. But the other one, which he brought up, which I wasn't aware of, is that we're talking about the England-Ireland rivalry. Ukraine's jersey has provoked outrage in Russia because it has a map of the Ukraine which includes the Crimea. So you what was your kind of pro-Russian ways, JD? It's, I don't know what you make of that, but it's good to have a bit of a needle there beforehand. Maybe they'll end up playing each other, although it's unlikely.
I don't imagine Ukrainian TV stations or radio stations are having debates about how they would feel about Russia winning or vice versa. You know, I don't think they'll have that. Same.
Exactly.
Wouldn't have that issue. Yeah.
We're all comrades here on OTB Football Saturday. That's all I can say. Austria, North Macedonia. I suppose that is one thing for the Europa League, isn't it, Dan? That they were the qualifiers from the Europa League, North Macedonia.
The Nations League. Yeah, no, Macedonia, North Macedonia are in from League D. UEFA politicised the European Championships massively in terms of like one for everyone, the audience to some degree, you know, and this one even moving around the continent and stuff. And it's not everyone's cup of tea, and I don't know, like you kind of hope that North Macedonia are at least competitive, because it does sort of demean it a small bit if you have a team there, you know, from the lowest 12 countries and they get hammered. So you would hope that, like, they've taken momentum from qualifying and they've improved. And listen, you know, for them, it's a really special moment. So you don't want to be too sort of patronizing or dismissive of it. You just hope that they can be competitive to justify the decision to give them a place.
Did they beat Germany recently, Dan?
They did. They beat them away, yeah. So, like, they've clearly improved, and they actually have, like, a manager that they've stuck with over a long period of time. So it's been like reflective of a project that's grown and it's peaked at the right time. But obviously part of it was being in that League D. Like if they'd been a small bit higher rated, you know, when the draw was made, they wouldn't have been in the bottom 12 nations. They wouldn't be in that now, I don't think, at the moment, but they were in the right place at the right time. And good luck to them.
Theo Pandic, does he could do something.
He's still going, yeah. He's still going. 37. Yeah, he's still going.
5-3-1-6, nothing wrong with not wanting England to win if you're not obsessed with supporting an English club each week. The hypocrisy is laughable, says John in Galway. And my friend and I were inter-railing after €88. We had two of those pennies, 1-0 t-shirts. Italians paid us big bucks for them, relatively. If we brought more of them, it would have kept us in beer money for the trip, says Joan Wicklow on 5-3-1-0-6 here. Any kind of dark horses for you, Stephen? Anybody you're looking forward to that might surprise us? Or do you think it's once again about the top teams, Portugal, France, Spain?
Yeah, I think the winners are gone. I don't think we're going to see a situation like we did a few years back when Greece won the tournament. I think it's that the winners are going to come from one of the big boys. And I think Portugal, I think they're the ones for me where outside, kind of little outside chance. I think we've got some really good players in the squad, like, got Jota there as well, Fernandes, Man United, and obviously Ronaldo. You know what he's like when he's in tournaments. He can kind of turn around. He's still a sublime athlete. And yeah, I wouldn't put it past them to win it again.
Johnny, you're overachievers and underachievers?
Ooh, underachievers. That is a tough one. I don't know what to make of Italy. I think they might be a bit overhyped after last night. I think they're probably a team that'll be that'll be hard to break down, but I think they'll there should be better sort of offensive teams than them. Overachievers, I honestly think England can go all the way in this tournament. I think they have the quality. They have so much pace on the break. I think they'll be able to absorb a lot of pressure. You know, if they go 1-0 up, rather than what they did against Croatia, I think they should be able to sit back but also have massive, massive counter-attack and pace. And I think they have a great chance, actually.
And Dan, just to wrap up, we'll talk about it probably in more depth next week, but a bad result for Dundalk last night and maybe rumblings that the club could be taking a different direction.
Well, yeah. I mean, every week there's something going on there. And I mean, losing a home to Waterford is pretty grim. Yeah, I mean, it did look like they were going to go with Jim McGilton for the rest of the season in a sort of a caretaker capacity, even though he's also the sporting director. But there's obviously big question marks about the intentions of the owners at the end of the season. And, you know, writing a bit about today, and I mean, that's been knocking about a bit, and it continues. That speculation won't go away. And really, like, you know, it's maybe not sad for everyone else who's been watching Dundalk win for years, but like, to think that they're talking about cost-cutting measures at that club when they've won so much in recent years and qualified for the group stages twice, they've really met a balls of it, to be honest, you know. And it's not getting any better there at the moment, unfortunately.
Okay, we got to go. I know, lads, you'll all be wearing your Irish shirts tomorrow watching England and Croatia. It's only a joke. But enjoy the game, lads, and enjoy the... enjoy the rest of the football this weekend.
I do have the Croatia shirt somewhere, John, but I'm not sure if it fits me anymore, but I might try it, you know.
Okay.
I might try it.
Okay. All right, lads. Thanks
Finland
so much.
I think Finland will do better, JD, as well. Sorry. I think Finland, as an outside team, will do better than they're expecting. They'll be my outside team to cheer on along with the Scots.
Okay. Great jerseys as well, Finland. Okay, Johnny, Dan and Stephen, thanks so much for this afternoon.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Quickstar car insurance you can sort anytime online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.